This is Nurse User News for the week of July 1st, 2019, and I'm your host, Rebecca Hartman Baker. Today's guest is Ben Maxwell. Ben is the Building Infrastructure Group Lead at NERSC, which is a new job since the last time that we talked. Congratulations, Ben, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
All right, so today's topic is the mechanical substation outage at the end of July. So the first question is, why are we disrupting NERSC users with this enormous outage that's going to be over a weekend?
Yeah, so aside from getting on everyone's bad side, we've got to do a partial building outage for electrical power as part of the NERSC 9 facility upgrade project, which is still underway, trying to be ready with the building upgrades before Perlmutter shows up at the end of 2020. So this is our first big project outage, and what we are doing on this is preparing the electrical system and expanding it to be ready to receive additional building equipment to provide more cooling capacity. So the 596 substation is responsible for providing electrical power to the pumps, cooling towers, and air handlers, and the elevators, is kind of a random aside, but the 596 substation provides the main mechanical power for those systems. And in order to expand the system, we need to turn that substation off, which means that the pumps and cooling towers and everything that helps keep the cooling water loop running needs to come down. So as a result, the computers need to come down.
Okay, that kind of makes sense. So we're going to add some panels to the electrical system.
Correct. So the substations, they're comprised of high voltage switches, a transformer, and a low voltage distribution section. So power comes in from the medium voltage switchgear, which is the lab's medium voltage distribution system that connects up to our main substation with the high voltage lines. From the substation, power's transform from 118 kV to 1247 kV, which is the lab's distribution. And at the medium voltage switchgear, that power is split up into different segments, and each of those segments feeds a substation. And the substation receives the 1247 power, drops it down to 480 volt power, and then that is distributed throughout the building. So the 596 substation is the electrical component that feeds all the mechanical equipment.
Okay. So we're just kind of expanding it, basically.
Yes. There are two panels in particular that will go into the mechanical level of the building, level one. And one of those panels will feed new pumps at the south end, the tower pumps, and it'll feed power to the new cooling towers that will go out on the exterior basin out at the south edge of the building. The second panel will power additional pumps towards the north end of the mechanical room, and it will also provide electrical power for a series of exhaust and supply blowers that will provide new cooling for the electric rooms, which is an add from the original construction that was premised on a more natural ventilation system that hasn't quite panned out to be as efficient and effective as was hoped.
Okay, so we're going to add those new air handlers later.
Exactly. The pumps and cooling towers and air handlers and things will basically come down the road. This is the first step in preparing to provide power to that equipment once it comes in.
Okay, but I heard that we're going to do something else while everything is down so that we can make room for those new air handlers.
Yeah, so there were two discoveries that are either fortuitous or not fortuitous, depending on the way you look at the discovery. But what we found is there are some existing pipe taps at the south end of the building that were intended to feed the air handlers. A little bit of the cooling water goes to provide some additional cooling. And we found that the taps in their current perpendicular state will run right into the air handlers. And we weren't exactly sure why this was. It's left over from the original CRT building construction. One of the thoughts is that the taps were never intended to feed a double stack air handler, only a single stack, because it's the upper unit that we're having the challenge with. So with that discovery, we realized that with the 596 outage, where we have to take down the computers, we will now have to do a partial drain of the cooling water loop so that we can loosen the pipe fittings in that area and twist the taps so they run at an angle and will go around the corner of their air handler. And the additional piece of work that came out of this was that there was a maintenance planned for a heat exchanger in the mechanical level back in the late winter. And when we were attempting to perform the maintenance, we discovered that there was a valve that would not close all the way, which didn't allow us to isolate the heat exchanger. And so we're going to take advantage of the cooling system being offline to take that valve apart, inspect that portion of the piping system to see if there's a clog or if the valve is faulty. We have a replacement valve that we're planned to have installed on the likely chance that the valve is damaged. We're just going to take advantage of the system being down to do that work.
So you told me an interesting story about how they're going to drain those pipes.
So the cooling water is it's a special treated water. So there's a scaesol system that's managed to make sure that there aren't any bioagents or anything in the water system. So you don't want to drain the whole system, because it also takes a long time to fill up. It's actually easier to drain and quicker than it is to fill it up. So one is you don't want to drain so much of the system that you're going to extend the schedule just by waiting for water to fill up. And then the other is that you can't drain too quickly because the lab has limits on how much wastewater they can discharge into the system. The scaesol chemical, by the way, is apparently environmentally friendly. It's not, like radiator fluid or anything like that. But there is a limit on how much you can pour down the drain at once. So the subcontractor has to basically drain to large plastic water containers that will basically, contain enough of the cooling water system to fill up and allow them to do their work in a timely fashion. And I think that's somewhere in the range of 6,000 gallons. But they're limited to pouring it down the drain at about 15 gallons a minute. So they coordinate that immediately. As soon as the water starts coming out, there's a hose inside these gigantic, they're like food grade containers that you'd see in wine or beer industry, pretty large things. They'll immediately start to pump it out at a controlled rate so that you can minimize the amount of time that the containers are sitting there. So it's interesting to watch.
Wow, yeah, that's gonna be a long drain.
Yeah, they've got it figured out.
Okay, so then when they fill it back up, how do they make sure that it's not full of air bubbles or something?
So first, the cooling water system is just filled back up with industrial water. And after the outage is done and the system back up and running, we have a special appointment for our scaesol subcontractor to come back and to run samples and coupons of the water. And the system has an automatic self-correction system that they'll put the necessary amount of protection, chemical protection, into the water, and then they'll come and double check that everything's working well. So introducing air into the cooling water loop is a very, very dangerous situation for the computer. So we wanted to really make sure that does not occur. So the first thing is locking as much of the existing water away so it's unaffected by the drain. The next thing is filling the water back up and slowly getting air out of the system. And they have a series of unleashing the valves and kind of letting the system come back. And there's a high point in the pipe system that they can basically very slowly bleed off to make sure that all of the air has gotten out of the system. So that's another thing that needs to be very carefully controlled so you don't accidentally leave a large air gap in the system that can be damaging. And that's one of the reasons that when we did some of this work with the same subcontractor, when we did the heat exchanger and pumps project, we had a chance to sort of let them get familiar with how that process goes. So we're drawing on a lot of experience to make sure that we follow the same practices this time.
Okay. So now, are we going to inspect the medium voltage switchgear like we did last year while everything's down?
So this outage is a little bit different. The 3-year maintenance actually took the medium voltage switchgear down, which means there was no power coming into Building 59 whatsoever. This outage, we're actually locking out one step downstream from the medium voltage switchgear. So the 596 substation will be powered off, but there is a second substation, 590, that provides electrical power to the building itself. It also powers some of the building mechanical equipment that doesn't have anything to do with the HPC systems or anything on the computer floor. So the medium voltage switchgear will still be active, but it's just that since 596 has to come down, it basically takes most of the air handlers down, so there will be no ventilation inside the building, which makes it a sort of a undesirable place to occupy while you have the air system off.
Okay, so I remember last year we had a generator and they had to provide lights and all that stuff, but this time we don't need to do that.
That's right.
Okay. What about our operations staff? So will they be here on site?
So they'll be on site, but we've set up a remote operations space for them in Building 70, which is right next to Building 59. So if anything happens and the operators need to visit the computer floor, it'll still be accessible, but they will not be in the normal operations center.
Okay. So does it really take 2 days to add two panels? Because like I could do that at my house in an afternoon. Right?
Yeah. Well, these are big panels, and it's the amount of work and coordination required to make sure this work actually happens is, you know, takes quite a while to choreograph. And we always want to plan for things not going perfectly. And there are inspections and a lot of steps to kind of get to that point. So we think we have ample time to do the work, but it's always good to plan wisely and then make sure you outperform to that plan.
Oh, well, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
How do people know what to do and when?
Yeah, there's a lot of planning that goes into making sure one of these outages has the right amount of time to get everything done. So while the amount of work seems sort of small, there are actually quite a few number of people that need to be involved. And so we have been planning this outage already for probably 2 months, very lightly at first, sort of notional, and we keep repeating and iterating on planning what will be done, what won't be done, what impacts things have about shutting certain parts of the system off. And eventually we work towards a script that is often referred to as a MOP, method of procedure, that ends up just sort of being a timeline of all the events that need to happen in the right order, who needs to be there, what additional laboratory resources are needed for operating valves and kind of following lab protocol. There end up being a lot of people necessary for lab support, from fire watts to spinning valves or doing lotto and electrical systems. And then our subcontractor, XL Construction, has their own team that's choreographing the events. We have our internal construction manager who's helping coordinate between the program. And XL is also responsible for their sub-tiers, and we have two of their main sub-tier contractors in there. One is performing the mechanical work on the pipes, so replacing the valve and turning the two pipe spools and draining the water system. And then Rosendin Electric is responsible for doing all the electrical work. So we need to also make sure that their efforts are coordinated, and they each have crews that will need man lifts and, you know, all kinds of tools and power requirements. So eventually we'll have a script that sort of gets down probably about the half hour level. So we'll make sure that all the resources are in the right order and everyone knows where they need to be. And that plays into safety, because you identify which tasks are most hazardous and where people are. So it's an interesting process. And it also requires a front-end interface with NERSC and ESNet to make sure that the systems have enough time to be turned off and kind of run front-end maintenance and upgrades. And then we also need to think about the back end of the project of, you know, if things run away on the construction project and we need more time, when's the latest we can notify the program that we're running into problems and what can we do? And even if things go right according to script, there's still time to notify NERSC to figure out why they're going to try to bring up computer systems on Sunday, or should we just hold out for Monday? So it's an interesting process. It takes quite a few meetings and quite a few number of people to come together.
Yeah, sounds like it. So if we're not shutting down all the power, then are there still some computers that are going to be staying on as well?
Yeah, there are some portions in the common area that we're going to try to keep awake and functioning during the outage. And so we've been coordinating with NERSC and ESNet to identify what those systems are, how much heat they will generate, and Air Handler 11 is fed from substation 590, which will allow it to provide a certain amount of cold air to blow through. And I think there are two of the blowers to exhaust the air that we're pumping into the computer space that will allow the air to flow. The challenge is if we end up with a humid day, the ability to use the evaporative cooling that is based on city water will be limited, because we don't want to pump too much humid air into the underfloor plenum. So we've got a short list of systems that we'd like to keep up, and I think we're going to have to prioritize that list depending on the weather conditions. And so Elizabeth has been running a series of meetings with NERSC users to sort of identify all of that, and we're going to continue to meet to sort of see how the weather looks as we get closer and closer to that window.
Well, this has been a really interesting and informative conversation. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you.